You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder, and I'm joined today by Lucas County Health Commissioner, Dr. Eric Gojinski. Of course, we're talking about COVID-19, the coronavirus pandemic. And, Doc, the first thing is, whose health ecosystem dominates here in Northwest Ohio? Ohio, an early reactor, or Michigan, where the shutdown was much later?
Well, again, you have to be able to give the props to the governor and Dr. Acton for doing what they did so early. That is going to really, again, flatten that curve that we've talked about. But it's going to save lives here. I think we can already see that in the numbers that we're seeing. I got a feeling that we all thought that we were going to see higher numbers. And of those individuals who are ill and or who have passed away, we're not seeing it yet. But I caution us that we are going to see increased numbers of both individuals who become ill, so testing positive, but then also those that will not be able to make it through a serious illness like COVID-19.
How has Toledo's proximity to a hotspot like Detroit affected your role here in Lucas County?
Well, I think the big thing is that, you know, again, you have to plan for the worst and hope for the best, and that's what we're trying to do right now. We're working with a multitude of different agencies that can bring resources to bear, limited resources at that, but it's still that planning issue is so important right now for our community. Again, it's all situational awareness as well. So what's happening in Michigan? We need to realize that is going on, take that in consideration, but then continue to plan with what we got for what we think will happen in the next week to two.
Now, Ohio Health Commissioner Dr. Amy Acton has discussed Toledo quite often as a cross-border collaborator with Michigan because you're apparently in a regional health plan that includes Southeast Michigan in addition to the activity in Ohio. How does the regional health plan work in this cross-border crisis?
Well, you know, we've been planning for pandemic major issues actually since I came into the Toledo Health Department back in about 2001, 2002. So we've worked with a multitude of different partners, both in-county and within the region of Northwest Ohio, and actually Southern Michigan. They are part of our planning process, and they have been for well over a decade now. So we do have those relationships built with them, and the ability for us to, again, talk across borders is important, but then more importantly, understand what's happening in more of a, if you would, in a situational, operational perspective throughout Northwest Ohio, including those southern counties, since we've been able to, work together for so many years.
You know, I've seen a lot of reports that Toledo hospitals have been helping with the Detroit outbreak. Does Michigan help with the supplies, given that that's such a, we're so short supplied when they send people? Do they help with some of their supplies that they're getting?
You know, I don't know that that's more of a hospital question itself. Again, I know that right now hospitals are, we do not have infinite resources. Definitely, they're finite, and so I know that they're making sure that those resources are being used wisely and judiciously, like N95 masks, like gowns, and things of that nature. So I know their plans internally actually look at how to use those resources. But again, I don't know how those resources are shared with inside of a hospital system.
You know, I've been taking daily walks in Wildwood Park, and suddenly there are barriers in the parking lots to maintain social distancing. Was this at the health department's order, or tell me what you know about that?
Well, you know, again, we work with so many different entities and agencies, and they've been fabulous to work with. They understand the issues that are facing us or what could face us if we don't look at social distancing and do it right. The Metro Parks, again, is a fantastic player with inside of our community. They have asked questions and what can we do, but they've really taken it upon themselves to make sure that, again, they're doing their part to protect the community and those individuals that are actually trying to use that park as well, too. So they've done things like, blocked off sections of parking spaces and really, really focusing in to make sure that people are not getting too close to each other. But again, I think you heard them loud and clear that, you know, again, being the great partner they are with our community, they're going to take a hard look at, you know, if people don't use the parks right, they'll take further measures. And again, we don't want to see parks closed because we're going to need them over the next couple of weeks because people are going to have to get out and walk around and take in fresh air. But we, as those consumers, those park users, have responsibility too to, you know, abide by what the park is asking us to do. And again, stay away from each other. Don't go out in groups unless it's your family. You know, all those things that we've been talking about. And again, I cannot say enough about the Metro Parks, so many other agencies, organizations, entities that are really trying to make sure that we come out of this thing on the other side better than what can anybody could expect.
Now, listening to the state's plans for the pandemic, it appears that Toledo is in the Cleveland zone. Is that a new relationship or is that an easy transition for you?
Well, again, you know, we've had regions before. Within public health, we've had those similar planning regions, you know, for, like I said, you know, well over a decade. Actually, it's much longer than that right now. That region one is, I think, is still trying to be fleshed out, how that's going to look. I think, again, don't know exactly, but this is all to be able to, you know, make sure that we're responding not only as Northwest, not in Lucas County, Northwest Ohio, Northern Ohio, but as a state to be able to move things around as needed and to make sure that we as Ohioans are, you know, are taken care of as best that can actually happen in a pandemic crisis. And again, I cannot say enough about what Dr. Atkin has done, you know, the governor and so many other individuals to quickly respond to this planning issue and to be able then to say, we are going to make sure that, you know, you as Ohio resident are going to be taken care of the best that we can.
Is it likely that Toledo's proximity to Detroit will keep protective orders here in place beyond what the state has to endure, just given because you're so close to a much greater statistical danger than much of the rest of the state?
Well, again, I don't know how that is actually going to pan out as we go through these next couple weeks. You know, it depends on how we peak, how Michigan peaks, how the system in Michigan is going to work. I know, again, that that planning process in Ohio is taking place to be able to make sure that we respond to those foreseen is really what we're trying to do. And then I know, just like any other planning that we've done in the state for pandemic flu or other major issues, that we're going to look hopefully at those unforeseen issues or those things that we might look strategically for that could happen in a week or two or three. I mean, that is the way that we planned, and we've always planned that way. I got a feeling that, you know, I know those players who, at least in Northern Ohio, excuse me, Northwest Ohio, that have been working on the plans internally, and they are some of the best planners out there. So I'm comfortable of what we're doing here relative to that planning process. I couldn't ask for, you know, a better team to be looking at some of that stuff. And I think the community needs to understand that there are some really sharp people who are looking at issues that we thought we would never actually have to deal with.
You know, it's funny you say that. A public health official can go an entire career in relative obscurity. Now you're at the epicenter of our daily existence. How's that changed your life? I mean, you're supposed to be prepared, but who could possibly imagine something like this?
You know, again, I cut my teeth early on with epidemiology and public health, with disaster preparedness. You know, I did a lot of planning over the years for Lucas County and helped out with the region. And we talk about pandemic flus and we exercise for pandemic flus. And you know, I always kind of felt kind of weird when we would design an exercise and we'd throw 6 or 7 different injects in there that you would think, well, an inject would be an issue or scenario that you would have to actually deal with. And I'd be like, this could never happen, but okay, we'll throw it in there anyway. This started, and as a planner, you're like, you couldn't make some of the stuff up of what you had to deal with and the variables and how fast things were coming at you. But again, I go back to, we were as prepared at that point in time years ago doing all this pandemic food planning that we could ever be. And now that we see it, we were lucky that we were able to do some of those things and really stretch ourselves and stress ourselves during those exercises. But again, you never really understand the full issues until you get into something like this. And you're looking around going, there is so much that we need to do, and we're going to handle it. But again, it was the training that we had to be able to take that information in, process it as fast as we can, and then move on it. But again, every event is different, and this one will continue to be different over the next couple of weeks.
Is it kind of like that old Mike Tyson line, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face?
You know, yes, and I think that happens all the time. The only good thing about this is that a lot of these things that we've talked about, whether it's looking at a regional approach or we're working inside of an emergency operations center, you know, we got these plans that are in place. We have the foundation. Now what we need to do is be the professionals that we're supposed to be and move these things forward and do the best that we can. And again, Lucas County, those professionals in that emergency operations center who are responding every day, you know, we start our day early. I'm getting emails at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, we're working until, you know, late at night. I was doing emails, you know, midnight a couple of times over the last week or so. So the individuals that are responding are just, you know, just the sheerest of professionals, and they understand what needs to be done, and they're just going to work to make sure that the community is protected.
You know, I envision a real paradox in your future. Universal knowledge that you need more support, but years of financial calamity for your funding sources. Thinking ahead, do you anticipate a lot of structural change in public health management?
Well, I said this over the last couple of weeks, and I've seen it firsthand, where, you know, public health is supposed to respond. You know, public health needs to be able to do things, and we do. But we've always done it, at least in Ohio, kind of by the skin of our teeth, and we just maybe just enough to be able to get us by, and we're always trying to, you know, fill gaps. I told my board president a couple weeks ago when this all started, I'm looking at it going, we can never allow this to happen again. We have got to make sure that public health, you know, stands up and says, never again. We need to be better prepared. You know, again, I understand money, it does not, unfortunately, grow on trees, but we have to take a different look at public health. When we don't have a disaster, we have to be able to respond to those chronic conditions, those acute conditions inside of our community that are really public health issues trying to prevent disease. And then we have the capability then to respond to something like this, or even, you know, half of what is actually happening, because we have the ability, we have the people power, we have the resources. So again, I really do believe that we need to take a different look at public health and say, are we willing not to fund it for not only the emergency issues, but then for our communities to become healthier?
I think Americans have been shocked by how dependent we are on China for basic medical goods. Now, if the products you need could be sourced here, how would that change things in response to this crisis?
I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. I think we need to bring those back to this area, to Northwest Ohio. I think we have the capability. I think we have the wherewithal, and definitely it would definitely help our economy. But from my standpoint, sitting in the chair that I am right now, we need to have better control of, you know, the medical devices, the pharmaceuticals, the things that make this all go when you have an event, to make sure that you can respond. Again, that's my opinion. I do believe that'll be shared by others when this is all over, to be able, again, to make sure that we never have to really rely on anybody else but us to be able to respond to an issue like we have.
Are there things public health officials can do to help bring that medical manufacturing base back to America and ideally back to Ohio?
I think when this is all over, again, and it will be, you know, we're going to come out on the other side of it. I think what we at least as public health leaders and officials need to do is sit down with our political entities and say we need to make sure that we're on the same page. We move this forward, and we need to make sure that we have control over at least some of the devices, some of the pharmaceutical issues, some of those tertiary types of equipment that you need, swabs and things of that nature, so that we have the ability to make sure that we have those resources when it's time to respond. We as leaders in public health have to not just talk, but we have to make sure that we have action, because again, we need to be able to respond the next time this happens. It may not happen 5 years from now, 10 years, it may not be 50 years from now, but we need to make sure that we're prepared for something like this again.
What are the logistics of scrambling for those resources? Is that something that you're doing at the county health department level? Is that at the state health department level? Is that hospital by hospital? Or just how is this all coming together?
Well, at least locally, what we try to do too is pick as many trees as we possibly can for resources. So at the Emergency Operations Center, there's actually, if you would, a section that looks at getting equipment, resources, things of that nature. But again, the state's doing it. The federal government's doing it. Everybody's trying to do it. But we're working here in Lucas County. We're working with the state and other entities to make sure that we're trying to pull as many resources in as we can. But that is a logistical nightmare because, again, just like we've talked about testing for so long in the United States, but specifically in Northwest Ohio and Lucas County, it's not so much the test itself, it's the stuff that you do the test with, even the swab itself. There's not much of that material out there, or that device, if you would, let's call it a device, the swab itself, out there to be able to take the test itself. So you have an issue with that. And there's this cascading effect with other resources that are needed to do that test. And that was the limiting factor, that one of the limiting factors. As we go down the path of, you know, the next weeks or so, you're going to see more of that equipment and those devices, if you would, available to do testing. So, again, I think that the short story is we try to look at every possible area to get devices, resources, people, whatever we can, and bring them into the event.
You know, my last guest on this broadcast was an Ohio man teaching in Wuhan when the pandemic broke out. He talked about digital thermometer check. Their temperatures checked digitally everywhere they went. Is something like that in our future, you think, following this?
Well, I think you're seeing it now. We've talked about, you know, businesses making sure that we take temperatures. I know at the department, we're taking temperatures. I know I take mine twice a day now, too. I think that, you know, it's important to make sure that we have that capability to understand that, you know, that is a factor that we have to look at to make sure that we're well enough to come into work. But again, that's just one thing that we need to do to make sure that we can actually perform our duties. I think the big thing is, you know, each one of us has responsibility, not just to take our own temperatures, but then to make sure if we're not feeling well, that we're staying at home, we're notifying our employer, we're making sure that people understand that, listen, I'm not feeling well, I need to stay at home. I think that's really important. You know, a lot of us, including me, before this all happened, you know, we go to work with a little bit of a cold because, you know, it's just the way that we're driven. But we can't do that, especially right now. If you're not feeling well, you need to stay at home.
We have so many people working in essential businesses. What is their risk?
Well, again, of course, anytime that you're out and about, there is a risk. You risk going, you know, you go into the grocery store. That's why that you've been hearing us say, you know, make sure you only go once a week. You know, limit your trips. So we talked about that. But it's the kind of the same idea as the more time that you're out and about and interacting with people at this point in time, you know, you increase the likelihood of maybe coming in contact with that virus and infecting yourself. So you got to take the same precautions. Again, wash your hands, stay 6 feet away. You know, at work, you know, employers should be making sure that, you know, if you can, you know, rotate shifts or, you know, split up shifts or do whatever they can, because I don't know everybody's business, if you would, and the processes, so it's hard for me to say exactly what you should do. But if you keep this, I start off with a box. Make sure that people are washing their hands and then staying 6 foot away, and then figure out what you need to do in your business to make that happen. Grocery store, prime example. I was in the grocery store a little over a week and a half ago, and they had X's on the ground, which is great, every 6 foot, but they had cash registers open back to back. And I said, you might not want to do that. You might want to, you know, have every other cash register. So it's that type of thing where you need to think, yeah, you got 6 foot separation, but then you have back-to-back cash registers. So rethink how you do your processes is probably the main thing that you need to take away from essential businesses operating. You still need to do that, but there's some things that you can limit the liability of people getting sick.
You know, just the definition of an essential business is left to the business to decide. And then if there's any gray area about it, the state is basically telling citizens, call your county health department. So here in Lucas County, how are things going? Are people observing the essential business law pretty well, or do you have some issues where you have to shut people down?
Well, again, you know, the people are calling in, and we thank them for that. That's important. We want to make sure, again, that those business owners understand what they should be doing, what they can't be doing. So today, you know, we got a number of calls today. I think it was well over 100 that we had to respond to. And so when we responded to them, you know, a lot of business owners are like, oh, okay, that makes sense. In other words, you know, put tape down on the ground to make sure that you're 6 foot away. You know, put cones out. So, you know, educating them better is what we want to do. Hobby Lobby, you heard yesterday, the governor was surprised that they were open, and there's a cease and desist order now. So Hobby Lobby, as far as the last report that I had, they were closed. So again, you know, we need to really make sure our businesses need to really think about this. Are they truly essential, first off? Because if they're not, what you're doing is you're putting not only your employees at risk, but those employees then could take it back home, and or you know, if you're not an essential business and you have customers coming in, again, that's a possibility of infecting somebody. So we just need to be really careful when we start talking about essential businesses and do they really need to be open? Do we really need to be going out and doing things? These are all things we've talked about. There's no hard and fast rule sometimes with these, and it is just kind of looking at it and saying, what is your business? Are you essential? And why are you essential?
So reading between the lines, is it fair to conclude you're basically talking with them and trying to help them process, given the health aspects of whether they're, one, essential, but two, whether they can operate as an essential business in a safe manner? And those are two separate and distinct things.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, again, you get a mixture of calls in. Again, we really appreciate those calls. You know, we want to make sure that those calls, though, are, you know, accurate. Sometimes, you know, we call up an operator, and it's not quite the right story that was given on the phone, and that's okay. We'll work that out. But, again, the issue really comes back to making sure that everybody understands that whether you're an essential business or non-essential business, you know, that this virus that is going around is nasty. It jumps from people to people pretty easy. So we really need to take the utmost care in protecting our workers, our customers, and our community.
Are there different strains of this is it the same in New York as Miami, or because there was talk in other pandemics in the coronavirus family that there were different strains and that some locations got hit with a more lethal strain?
This was beginning of March when I last read some research on that very issue, and I haven't seen anything since then. In China, they were looking at a one strain. It mutated into something different, which these viruses do. And the one strain that they had was much more aggressive, and then this other strain that is circulating now. Again, you know, you saw the mutation, so it could happen. You know, multiple times of a mutation. The thing you don't want to see is if a mutation happens that it doesn't get more aggressive. So that's what you would be concerned with. Again, viruses are amazing little things, if you would, and they have the ability to cause a lot of havoc. They have the ability to shift and drift over time.
Now, that second wave mutation is what made the Spanish flu of 1918-1919 so deadly, correct? And it was the second wave that was actually the worst?
Yeah, going back in history in 1918, if you from the history books again, the year before it actually became full blown, if you would, it circulated. It wasn't really all that bad, and then it just kind of died out. It was then in 18 where it became full bore, and it just, you know, it spread across the globe like wildfire, and that was the true concern at that point in time. Again, if you look at history, pandemics do that. The original SARS that we had here back in, 2001, 2002, had issues, but then it just kind of died out, and for a number of different reasons. But again, that's what happens to some of these. You know, they start up and then they die out, or they start up and then they just get even worse as they go through the life cycle.
And I brought that up because Dr. Acton refers to that particular incident quite often as kind of a reference point for what we're doing now and why we need to do it, which means if we don't flatten this curve and get beyond this, we have another wave coming, don't we?
Well, again, what we're trying to do is a couple things here. One, we're flattening the curve to extend the amount of time, so you hopefully have more treatment of options. You're not overloading the healthcare system in one slug, if you would. So that helps. You know, that helps us with resources and things of that nature. As we go down these next couple months, there's the possibility, the distinct possibility, as Dr. Acton, I do believe, has said, is that we could be seeing something else in the fall. So again, that's why it's so important that, you know, we limit the ability to us to really impact the healthcare system, because we're going to need it. We need to come up with these other breakthroughs that are always happening. I mean, it's really nice to turn on the TV and listen to Dr. Acton and the governor talk about, it seems like every day there's something else that we're trying to do to make sure that we could stave off, you know, a great amount of, let's call it, disaster from this pandemic. So there's these options that are coming at us, but we need that time to get those developed. You know, the vaccine, possibly. I just saw that, who is it, UPMC in Pittsburgh. Is looking at the vaccine and possibly starting to do some trials on that too. So I mean, there's always something new coming down, but we as individuals in our community need to have that responsibility to try to flatten that curve even more by staying home, washing our hands, making sure that if we don't need to go out, we're not.
So finally, is there anything we haven't discussed that you think our listeners need to know?
You know what? I want to talk about our medical professionals, our first responders, our public health professionals in this light, and all those essential employees that are out there. They're doing a job which I know that they never thought they were going to have to, kind of like we talked about. They are doing marvelous work, almost, I would call it almost superhero from what I've been able to see. My staff is, you know, working long hours. They're calling people back, doing the contact tracing. I see these first responders out constantly, you know, with these patients. You see our hospital providers doing everything they possibly can. And law enforcement's out there every day doing what they need to do. There are a lot of people that are putting themselves in a position that they never thought they would have to put themselves in position, but they are doing the work that they need to do to make sure that we are all safe. And I think that's a takeaway. When we start to reflect every day on, you know, having to stay in or not being able to go to the grocery store as much as we wanted to, or whatever it might be. There's people out there that are running around in our in each one of our communities trying to make sure that they save lives and they keep us all safe. And they're out there every day doing it. So a big thanks to each one of them for what they do and how they do it.
Well, Dr. Eric J. Skojinski, thanks to you. And thank you for joining us on In Focus today. Please be safe. And
you too.
We appreciate your good work.
Thank you. I appreciate you too.